Welcome to Legacy Fundraising Chat, where we talk about everything legacy related to help you as a fundraiser generate more interest amongst your supporters in legacy giving. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, founder of Persuasion and legacy marketer, providing consultancy, training, coaching and interim legacy support to small to medium-sized charities. I'm delighted that the National Free Wills Network is sponsoring my podcast. They allow you to offer your supporters a free solicitor written will anywhere in the UK, and the charity receives full measurable results. With 15 years of experience and over 500 million raised in future income for charities, the network can help charities of all shapes and sizes launch and maximise their legacy programmes. To find out more, visit nationalfreewills.net. Hello, listener. Welcome to episode 49. I don't think this episode's guests really need an intro. As anyone that's worked in the legacy sector in the UK and worldwide for some time would know them as the most respected and highly experienced in legacy marketing. Ashley Rowthorn is, of course, the CEO of Legacy Futures, under which the company operates a number of legacy services, including Legacy Link and Legacy Voice. Dr. Claire Routley is head of consultancy at Legacy Voice. If you enjoyed my first interview with Claire and Ashley last year, you'll absolutely love this one. So I've invited Claire and Ashley to discuss with me how you can get the most out of working with a consultant. So you have a balanced view from an independent perspective and from an agency. Here's my interview with Claire and Ashley. I'm really delighted to welcome Claire and Ashley from Legacy Futures. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sunita. Thanks for having us back.
Lovely. You've kindly agreed to come back on because I was really keen to get your thoughts on something that's hugely topical at the moment, and that's charities who are looking to work with legacy consultants. So I think there's loads of different ways, isn't there, to work with a consultant. But I think for the purposes of my listener who may not have actually worked with a consultant before or is looking to outsource some work, in your view, what sort of projects are better outsourced to a consultant versus an agency or even keeping something in-house?
That's a great question. So, I mean, an obvious statement, but it's starting to think about why you feel that you need some help. So is it, you know, you're looking to bring in some specific expertise or experience maybe that you lack within your organization. So it might be, for example, developing a strategy, for example, can be something that is really helpful to get to bring in some outside perspective. The other part might be because you just physically don't have enough time. You don't have enough capacity to do it yourself. You know, there's lots of other stuff going on. Maybe that someone's gone on a period of leave and you need to cover someone. So I think they're quite different reasons for needing to bring in some outside support, whether that is a consultant or an agency, for example. And I think both are really valid, but they are both different. So I'd kind of think about, you know, is it a thinking job or is it a doing job? Like, are you kind of hiring a brain or are you hiring a pair of hands? So it might be, you know, a strategic problem you're bringing in. It's a kind of thinking job. You're bringing in someone, you're buying their experience, their ability to help you solve your problem. And the value to you maybe isn't just purely in the time it takes, but it's in the outcome that you get out of it. Whereas when you've maybe got a capacity problem, you're looking for like an extra pair of hands. Of course, you're still buying that experience and competence, but primarily you're kind of buying the time. That's kind of how I would approach that. So what do you think, Claire?
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that, Ashley. I guess sort of getting into the nitty-gritty detail, then there's perhaps sort of certain types of jobs that we as consultants do quite a lot of. I think sometimes research can be a really good role to bring a consultant in, and I would because I'm a nerd who loves research. But again, I think it's that brain bit, isn't it? And it's that maybe sort of buying that particular skill that, you know, isn't necessarily a common skill that all fundraisers have there. So yeah, we do a lot of sort of research type projects, help people understand more about you know, their legacy supporters, sometimes what's happening internally, you know, where their colleagues are when it comes to legacy fundraising. We also do quite a lot of training work, which I think, again, you know, fundraisers might well have the skills to facilitate that themselves. But again, sometimes it's just useful to have an outside voice there that, you know, people don't sort of hear from on the day-to-day basis. So yeah, training and perhaps sort of facilitating various, again, in our world, obviously legacy related projects, you know, strategy work, that kind of thing. So again, it's maybe just an independent person that can get all of that information, skill, input from various people internally and just kind of enable that conversation to happen. So I guess those are sort of three type of projects that jump out as very commonly.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Claire, about sometimes an outside perspective is really valuable. And you know, when you're so immersed in your organization and your kind of day to day, there's that kind of thing of the curse of knowledge, almost like you can't quite see the wood for the trees, but bringing in somebody from the outside can kind of cut through a lot of that and help you to really get some clarity.
Yeah.
So I think that can be super valuable as well. Kind of a common experience is you go and you support or work with someone in an organization and they say, I've been saying this for years and like no one ever listens to me, but we bring someone else from the outside and all of a sudden and that's a real shame, isn't it? But it can
that's
really
exactly
help you to cut through stuff
having.
Sometimes
it just kind of adds credibility, doesn't it? So
I can definitely echo that. I have had clients say to me, oh, they'll listen to you just simply because you're a paper and you're completely out of the organization, even though I have been saying it from day one. I think you both really highlighted something that I always try to get clear with charities as well. So I also sit in the admin group of a Facebook group called Freelancers Fundraising, which Claire, you're a member of as well, and consultant. So we often have charities that want to post jobs, which is great. And my first question is, are you looking for a consultant or are you looking for a freelancer? Mm-hmm. And I think you both highlighted the absolute difference. There's the person that actually does the thinking and then the person that does the job. And also, like you said, there's very different skill set within that. And sometimes I think the two can merge, which often happens with myself. I might be starting on something and then I end up getting involved, but I think that's very different. But I think there's something about the charity being clear. What do they absolutely want?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's almost the first part of any project where you might be working with any sort of outside person is to, top tip is to set those objectives and be really, really clear about what you want before you start.
I'd agree. And I also know some freelancers as well that almost they have two rates. So they'll have a rate if they're doing a kind of strategic thinking consulting kind of job, and then they'll have a rate that's usually lower when it's more of a doing job. And that's not because they're necessarily less valuable, but naturally, when it comes to needing that implementation, you might need a lot more time and it might be inaccessible. So, but they know that, well, I'll commit a certain number of, might be a certain number of days a week, for example, over a period of time. I guess the other thing that we haven't quite talked about is that sometimes things might be useful for you to outsource. Like completely. So we do a lot of outsourced work in terms of legacy administration through our Legacy Link team. And it's there is usually because it's quite a specialized, some things might be quite specialized roles and might take you an awful lot of your time, but actually outsourcing that, somebody else who can pick that up, they can be potentially be a lot more efficient because they're extracted from the day-to-day of the organization. They can get that job done and it can deliver that for you, but it completely frees all of your time up to focus on those other areas that maybe you were being pulled into. I think at the beginning we've obviously talked about things that are very much short-term things. You know, you need to bring someone in for a specific task, but actually there might be things that are valuable to think about. Actually, what if I looked at my role slightly differently or at the way our organization's working, what things can we potentially outsource to free up our time so that we can focus on some of these things? And then maybe you don't necessarily need to bring in as much of that potentially slightly more expensive support for the short term. So that's worth thinking about too.
That's also a really good point, because it's a question that I always say to charities, who's doing your legacy admin? Because you absolutely need to take that out of the organization, because then you can actually focus on what you're employed to do. Because I do think that legacy admin can be extremely complex. All it takes is for one very complicated executive or a very complicated estate to just take up someone's time and then they're not doing the marketing. So I'm a real big fan of
that. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what we find is lots of charities that kind of come to us, they've been managing okay, but maybe something's happened or something, they've all of a sudden the case has come along that's just, it's complicated, it's complex. It's really taking up far too much of their time, and maybe they, because they've not experienced that before, they don't really know where to turn, and actually having a really experienced kind of pair of hands to support you frees up all your time. But also I think the thing that people are often surprised at is it actually just, it isn't that expensive. You know, it might only take a handful of hours for somebody who's been doing that for years and years, who does it day in, day out, and it's kind of a routine thing. So it's definitely worth looking at. But then equally, we do work, you know, there are organizations that we work with, and then they've grown to a point where it completely makes sense to recruit their own person, because there is enough work to get a dedicated, experienced person in-house to do it. I mean, that's amazing when we've done that, because it's kind of part of their success in terms of growing with legacies. Their income's grown to a point where actually it totally makes sense to bring that back in-house. So
it has to be in proportion though, doesn't it, in
terms exactly
of the time. And I think you've highlighted something quite poignant there, because, and I always think from my listener perspective, is that they might be thinking, well, how much is all this going to cost? I mean, we're talking consultants, we're talking outsourcing. And I think the key thing is that it's all very good value. And of course, we are going to say that. But when we kind of look at what the organization is going to get back, and bearing in mind that as consultants, you're coming in, doing that piece of work, which is actually fundamental to any legacy program, and then allowing the organization to go off and do what they absolutely need to do, that you really do get what you pay for.
Yeah, and I think what Ashley was saying about the legacy management side of things, that potentially someone can come in and take a job that might have taken an inexperienced person days and days to do, also potentially applies on when we're thinking about the legacy marketing side of things as well, you know, because I think when you're an expert in this, you do it day in, day out, and I'm sure you've experienced this, Anita. You can come in and you can sort of put your finger on an issue in sometimes a matter of hours, but for somebody who's completely new to this and legacies is just one bit of their job, you know, that might be again, you know, days and days, if not weeks and weeks of work for someone internal. So I guess I'm sure you've come across that situation in your role as well.
Oh, completely, all the time. And often charities will say, how long will this take? And it's done within a matter of hours. And sometimes, you know, I can churn things out at such a speed, because you're right, doing it all the time. I guess the other thing is just charities having that trust. And I think this then goes on to the thing that I'm really keen to help my listener with, is trying to find the right consultant. And how do you go about finding the person that's right for you? And I've mentioned the kind of Facebook group where charities can post, and for example, charities can also obviously post on LinkedIn and say, are you aware of any consultants in this space? But I suppose, how would you say most of your work comes through to yourselves?
I mean, I think word of mouth is a huge thing. It's actually a relatively small sector, isn't it, that we work within. Everybody seems to know everybody. And so I think if someone is looking for a consultant, actually going and you know, just talking to some other people that have worked with specific consultants is one way in which to start. Find out a bit more about their experience and, you know, really what they've valued working with specific people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the most obvious thing, really, is reaching out to your network, ask for recommendations, and especially like positive experience. People will shout about that rather than maybe broadcasting particular like negative experience. But I think most of the, I guess, contacts and work that we'll pick up is through word of mouth. It is through experience and people passing on and sharing positive experience. And I guess if you're being directly approached by someone, or the way I tend to think about it, if someone's really actively spending a lot of their time kind of selling themselves, then they're probably not that busy. getting on with their job. And usually when you think, oh, I haven't heard of from someone for a while, it's probably because they're super busy and they're working all the time. So but yeah, I think that's really important. You've got to, well, I'm sure we'll come on to talking about kind of how you work out what's right for you, but you've got to spend that time. And sometimes like experience is super important. Like you need to be, you're essentially buying someone's years of knowledge, learning and experience. You really want to be buying someone who knows what they're doing because they've done it year in, year out. Make sure you're assessing that, like look for someone's experience, but then talking to some other people that have worked with them, because I think a big part of it comes down almost like that's a benchmark. You want to know that you're engaging someone who really knows their stuff, but then you want to work with someone that you're going to work really well with. So a lot of it is about chemistry, and you know that you know that you've got a kind of a good way of working together. So that you really need to meet the person, but also talk to some other people who have had experience of working with them.
And the lovely thing I think we find now, we've been knocking around for quite a while, is that we get to work with the same person multiple times. So whether that's you know, they're in the same job and another opportunity arises, or they're moving on to a new charity and they'll bring us back in, so that's always a joy.
And what I really like is, echoing the thing that we have all been around for a long time in now, is that we've got a couple of mutual clients, and they are very open about the fact that they work with yourselves on a particular project, and then they work with me on something else. I think that's really clever, because what they've done is identified strengths. There's things that I cannot do that you two do, and there's things that I do that you two can do, but you choose not to do. So I think it's the charity going, right, I'm going to ask Sunita to do this piece of work, but I'm going to ask Ashley and Claire to do this piece of work, which is really interesting, I think. And that's a charity that I think is really clued up and knows exactly what they want, and actually utilising consultants for their strengths.
And we also, I mean, we'd love projects where we do get to work directly with other consultants or other agencies as well. That can crop up occasionally. So an organisation might bring us in as part of a workshop, for example, and their creative agency will also be there, and perhaps their media buy-in agency. And as you say, you know, really sort of play into the strengths of, you know, the different organisations that they work with, which is wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what I love about working in this sector, is it is so open. We have contacts with lots of people that I guess on paper might be seen as competitive, but actually it really isn't, because we complement each other. I guess sometimes we might be approached on the same project, and you know, that's it really doesn't matter, because they'll go with the person that's kind of the right fit for them at that time. But equally, there might be things that we can all help in different ways. So,
and I've recommended yourselves for projects that are just out of my scope in terms of being able to help on a scale. So I don't work with national charities. I'm not geared up. I'm independent. And often they need a level of research that only Claire can do. I mean, let's be absolutely honest. So I think, yes, it's about also us recognizing when we can do something and when we can't. And that's what I like about particularly, you know, yourselves, is that you're very good at kind of going, right, this is our expertise. However, this is what we'd rather not do, because I know you've made decisions about not doing interim support and offering that. And so I think it's good that you're very clear with clients rather than all things to all people.
And we tend not to get so much involved in the delivery, particularly on a legacy side, whereas, you know, Sunita is second to none in terms of really helping charities practically in that way. Like, I've worked with Sunita and her, the way that she kind of can engage with donors and have those conversations, and we're not good at that. So in the same way, there are times where we might work with a charity, and then it totally makes sense. So we say, actually, we can take you so far, then what you really want to do is work with this person who can help you take it onto the next stage.
The three of us at least are all of the sector, aren't we? We're not from outside the sector. Yeah. And ultimately, we really all want the best outcome for the people that we're working with, and even more importantly, for the people that they then go on to work with. So. Mm.
I feel I do want to share with the listener that there's no kickback between us either. So if we recommend each other,
that's true.
We don't get a commission on it.
No.
And unfortunately, that does exist in the sector. And, you know, I have an opinion about it and I'll talk about it on another episode. But I think that's important as well, that charities should really ask that question if another consultant is recommending another consultant and say, is this actually bona fide a recommendation or actually get
that is such a good point. And we've never really made a point about that actually, but it was something that we thought about kind of in the early days. But that it's so important that we're impartial, because even when it comes to like recommendations in terms of how we work with someone, in terms of the strategy you're developing, if you've got a vested interest in, say, passing on a particular piece of work to somebody else who's going to, you know, implement, you're going to start to give them things that are right for you rather than things that are necessarily the right thing for them. So yeah, we don't have any kind of commercial kickback relationships like that.
Yeah, and I think that really shows integrity actually, and wanting to do the best thing for the client rather than the best thing for the pocket. I really want to draw on your individual experiences of being independent consultants before you became this kind of machine, Legacy Futures. Claire, obviously I've worked with you on a consultant basis, mm-hmm. and you've always been very open, always up for having pro bono chats. I'm just really interested to know, when you worked independently, I guess what you learned from those experiences. So just to share something about myself in terms of, I don't pitch for work. Mm-hmm. So I used to when I first started out, and what I found is that I literally had no life, because I was doing client work Monday to Friday, and then I was spending weekends submitting proposals, and being a perfectionist, I would spend so much time trying to get the right font, making sure the charity's logo was in the right colour, and making sure that all the objectives were being met, and often finding, because I believe I'm fairly priced, but I'm not the cheapest consultant out there, because of my level of experience, that budget was always the contentious point. Mm-hmm. And therefore, because I never came out the cheapest, I rarely kind of got work in that way. Mm-hmm. But once I made that decision to stop doing proposals, the work just kept on flooding in as it is now, and I'm super busy just through word of mouth. So I'm just interested to know your experiences around pitching and being an independent consultant.
I mean, when it was just me, I think I probably followed a very similar trajectory to the one you've really just described, Sunita, around, you know, when I started out, I would sort of pitch for work. But very much like you, I think I got to the point that there were quite a lot of people who wanted to work with me specifically, which was really nice. And that really was enough to keep me busy. And like you say, you know, I don't really want to spend my, I'm a nerd. I love spending my evenings and weekends thinking about work, but probably not preparing pitch documents. So no, I sort of made a conscious decision that I wasn't going to go into those pitch situations when it was just me. But I think you sort of raise a really important point there, which it sort of relates to what we were talking about in terms of, you know, finding the right consultant for you. I mean, obviously price is a dimension of that, but that probably shouldn't be the only dimension, or perhaps even the primary dimension. You know, I think it should be much more about finding the person with the right expertise to, you know, to answer your problem. And if, you know, if you're just going on price, then you're not necessarily going to get the best solution for your particular organization.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there as well, Sunita, and yeah. I think people don't quite appreciate just the amount of time, not just time, but like emotional energy that you can go into these processes as well. And when you win them, they're fantastic. And when you don't, you know, which, let's be honest, you probably win a lot less than you go for. It can be really draining, especially if, you know, if you go on a run of like, you know, pitching and not winning, it can be quite kind of tough, especially when you're on your own. But I think now where we're at, I guess we're slightly different. And I think we've probably got a slightly different, I think it probably depends what we mean by pitching. So that we would always expect to respond to some kind of conversational brief from someone with a written proposal. So this is who we are. This is our approach. This is our experience. this is what we would do and what we deliver. These are the kind of costs and things. And we would also, you know, present this as part of maybe a selection process, particularly when we do work with slightly bigger organizations. There are procurement processes in place and they've got to do that. And, you know, because they're obviously spending charitable funds, they've got to show that there's good due diligence. But, and that's kind of okay. And some, you know, again, there might be multiple people involved and someone's going to be appointed. But I think in my view, what is really awful practice, which often you can be asked to do, is essentially to pitch, like to do the work up front and then pitch that as part of the selection process. So it's kind of standard practice that's come from kind of creative agency world and has crept into, I think, wider consultancy world, is that you're effectively, here's our brief. We want you to basically answer the question. Present us it, or maybe present us a range of things, and then what we're going to do is we're going to decide, oh, we like that one and we're going to pay for that one. And I kind of think it's almost borderlines in being unethical.
Completely.
Because especially for freelancers, for people who don't have that wider kind of support, the amount of time that, you know, and energy and investment you're putting in. So I think in that sense, we also wouldn't pitch, like we wouldn't do a piece of work where we're effectively having to spend quite a lot of time and money up front, almost answering the question. But what we certainly would do is, you know, give a sense of who we are and our approach, and maybe some thinking around the piece of work.
Listener, do tune in a fortnight's time for part two and conclusion of what you should know about working with a legacy consultant or agency.
Thank you so much for listening to Legacy Fundraising Chat, brought to you by Persuasion, a consultancy training and coaching organisation helping fundraisers just like you. Thank you also for everything that you do for your cause in the charity sector, making it an inspiring place to work. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, championing your legacy fundraising efforts.